story for another time. Acts chapter number 9. And go ahead and, or I'm sorry, chapter 26, beginning in verse number 9. And we'll read the whole chapter here, and then we'll see how far we get in the half hour or so. And David said to Abishai, "Destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" David said, "Furthermore, as the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. But I pray thee, take thou now the spear that is at his bolster, and the cruse of water, and let us go." So David took the spear and the cruse of water from Saul's bolster, and they gat them away. And no man saw it, nor knew it, neither awaked, for they were all asleep, because a deep sleep from the Lord was fallen upon them. Then David went over to the other side, and stood on top of an hill afar off, a great space being between them. And David cried to the people and to Abner, the son of Ner, saying, "Answerest thou not, Abner?" Then Abner answered and said, "Who art thou that criest to the king?" And David said to Abner, "Art not thou a valiant man? And who is like to thee in Israel? Wherefore then hast thou not kept thy lord the king? For there came one of the people in to destroy the king, thy lord. The thing is not good that thou hast done. As the Lord liveth, ye are worthy to die, because ye have not kept your master, the Lord's anointed. And now see where the king's spear is, and the cruse of water that was at his bolster." And Saul knew David's voice and said, "Is this thy voice, my son David?" And David said, "It is my voice, my lord, O king." And he said, "Wherefore doth my lord thou thus pursue after his servant? For what have I done, or what evil is in mine hand? Now therefore, I pray thee, let my lord the king hear the words of his servant. If the Lord hath stirred thee up against me, let him accept an offering. But if they be the children of men, cursed be they before the Lord. For they have driven me out this day from abiding in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, Go serve other gods. Now therefore, let not my blood fall to the earth before the face of the Lord. For the king of Israel has come out to seek a flea, as one doth hunt a partridge in the mountains." Then said Saul, "I have sinned, return my son David, for I will no more do thee harm, because my soul was precious in thy sight this day. Behold, I have played the fool, and have erred exceedingly." And David answered and said, "Behold, the king's spear, and let one of the young men come over and fetch it. The Lord render to every man his righteousness and his faithfulness. For the Lord delivered thee into my hand today, but I would not stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. And behold, as thy life was much set by this day in mine eyes, so let my life be much set by in the eyes of the Lord. And let him deliver me out of all tribulation." Then Saul said to David, "Blessed be thou, my son David. Thou shalt both do great things, and also shalt still prevail." So David went on his way, and Saul returned to his place. Now, I know the lesson titled this section here, One Thing. I personally ended up titling it Another Round, to be honest with you, because we kind of did the exact same thing just a couple of chapters ago. Saul's hunting David. David gets the opportunity to kill him, and instead he cuts off part of his robe. This time, Saul's out hunting David, and David takes his spear. He takes the cruse of water and puts Saul in his place yet again. Saul just ain't learning the lesson. That's all there is to it. Let's see, I've had a note here. It said, at no point in any of David's statements to Saul, while on the run from him, has he ever begged for his life. David is trusting in God's protection. If it is his time to die, then so be it. Saul never offers up any real justification for his pursuit of David. There is no, these are the reasons for the charges I have deemed thee worthy of capital punishment. It's just, he's worried about David taking away his throne from him. And he's just panicked over that. And, you know, a lot of people get that same way. They're so frightened that they're going to lose what little bit of power they've got. They're going to lose their position. They're going to lose this. They're going to lose that. I heard someone say if you could lose it, then it was never really yours to begin with. So, and definitely it had already been taken away from Saul. God actually told him twice. The second time, it's like, that's it. The first one kind of comes across as, in, okay, maybe Saul, you can get back in my good graces. I know you're not going to, but, you know, hey, you could actually try to. The second time is like, don't even bother trying. You're done, okay? David is finally old enough to get anointed and start training for it. All right, so back in verse number 9, and David said to Abishai, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? And of course, Abishai, he was a very bloodthirsty guy, and he's looking, he's like, David, yeah, buddy, we got him now. We could take him. Going through studying this, it's one... has to question if they had even posted any sentries at all, or if just everybody fell asleep, what the situation is. But whatever it is, it was enough to convince Abishai, David, we got this. This joker is dead. Literally, all we got to do. And you know what, David? You don't even got to do it. I'll tell you what. I'll do it for you. That way you don't even have to actually get your hands dirty. I'll do it. And David comes back here and says, no, you can't raise your hand against the Lord's anointed. Because it don't matter. If that's the one that God wants in that position, and you raise your hand against them, you try to get them fired, replaced, talk bad about them, whatever, you're going against God's anointed, and God's going to put you in your place for it eventually. Maybe not right now, but eventually it's going to happen. So David looks at that, and he realizes that there was no need to physically harm the man. David understood the frustrations of his men, but it still wasn't right to do anything to their king. They're still Israelites. Saul's an Israelite. Saul's the king of the Israelites according to what God did all those years ago. So he's our king. Just like Biden is our president. You know, we shouldn't be trying to do anything to him. You know, we pray for him. Pray that things, you know, wisdom and follow God's will and all this stuff there. No one should be trying to go out there and hurt him or anything like that. That would be wrong. No matter what we think about anyone's politics, president is the president, the mayor, the governor. They're the ones that we have designated to be in charge. We cannot physically hurt them. Political cartoons, yeah, that's fine. Sorry, I like political cartoons. But to actually go and physically hurt them, and especially do anything to their children, no, you don't do that without proper justification. But that's a can of worms there. So David refused to take the easy route here. Saul wasn't just the enemy. He was the ruler of the people. And David understood he still had responsibility to God's law, no matter what the person had done to them. I got Exodus 22:28 wrote down here. So let me look at that real quick. It seems like I did want to bring that one out real quick. Exodus 22, verse number 28. Thou shalt not revile or despise the gods. The word gods there also means judges. Nor curse the ruler or governor of thy people. And that's a verse there that ends up getting cited by Jesus as well. Have I not said that ye are gods? In other words, ye are judges. Not gods as in, you know, Zeus or Apollo or any of that stuff. Or even God Almighty. It's, you know, judges. But we're not supposed to be doing these things. David's got that in mind as he's dealing with Abishai here. Saul was the ruler that God had established and given authority to. As such, David planned on giving him his due respect. This extended to not killing him unless he personally committed a capital offense. While Saul had ordered the priest killed, he himself hadn't done it, nor could David prove that Saul had ordered it. Everything was secondhand testimony to go off of, and as such, that would only lead to anarchy if he went by, "Well, I heard that he ordered Doeg to kill the priest." Yeah, you don't get to do it that way. Just like in our courts nowadays, you got to be able to prove it. Interesting. To kill Saul would be to sit in God's seat, and the only one who reaches that level of judgment is God himself. Verse number 10. David said, "Furthermore, as the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish." So David needed to calm Abishai's passion down, so he chose his words very carefully. To sound as if he's taking an oath, "As the Lord liveth," okay? Not quite, "I swear on the Lord" or something like that, but he's really close. He's kind of playing in a gray area here because he wants Abishai to understand this is how it's going to be, and I know God's going to take care of it, and you need to trust me on this. So it's a serious thing always to invoke God's name. And David here, he's doing it, even though he's not actually taking an oath, he's still invoking God's name that Saul would eventually die. David listed three different avenues for Saul's possible eventual death. As the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him. That's one way. In other words, God would render judgment upon him. Got a reference over here for Acts 21, verse 21 through 23. Let me look at that real quick since we were talking about Acts here a little while ago. And see what's over here. Acts 21, verses 21 through 23. "And they are informed of thee that thou teachest all the Jews which are among the Gentiles," am I in 20? Yeah, among the Gentiles, "to forsake Moses, saying they..." saying that they ought not to circumcise their children, either to walk after the custom. What is it therefore? The multitude must needs come together, for they will hear that thou art come. Do therefore this that we say to thee, we have four men which have taken a vow on them. God will render judgment. I think I wrote down a wrong chapter there. That is not correct. And I don't remember what I had in mind on that one, because actually I did that a couple of weeks ago. Those were some good verses there, just not the right ones for the moment. God's going to end up rendering judgment. Divine judgment's going to come, or as the Hebrews refer to it as cutting off. He cut off his line. Zedekiah, for example, the last king to sit upon the throne there in Israel. He was part of the chosen line, but he wasn't the one the line was going to go through. That was his Jeconiah. Zedekiah, what happened when the Babylonians came in that third time, and he tried escaping with his boys, and they got captured. Nebuchadnezzar had his sons killed in front of him and then put out his eyes. So the last thing that Zedekiah ever saw was the death of his sons. And Nebuchadnezzar cut off his line. He wasn't going to have any more kids. Unlike Jeconiah, even though he went to be put in the dungeon, he still ended up having a child, and that child had a child whose name was Zerubbabel, and went back and rebuilt the temple there in Jerusalem. But Jeconiah's line wasn't cut off, because we know it ends up going to Joseph, the foster daddy for Jesus. Zedekiah, cut off. The second way, this is, "As the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die." In other words, natural causes. Life catches up with us. And I've joked with this a few times. People will comment about how much I love bacon, and Bacon's the fifth food group. That's all there is to it. Anything goes wrong, bacon will fix it somehow. But people will comment to me about how unhealthy it is to eat so much bacon. And I'll tell them, well, that's fine. At least I know what's going to kill me. I'm not going to be one of these health nuts, 90 years old, laying in a hospital bed, dying of nothing. Because they lived those healthy lives and exercised all the time. They don't know what's killing them. I will at least know what killed me. So natural causes, you wore out, okay? You live fine, but you didn't enjoy your life because you were busy not eating bacon. So that's on them. So that's the second way that Saul could have ended up dying. Or the third way, or he shall descend into battle and perish. And of course, we know that from over in 1 Samuel 31, verse number 6. He does descend there into battle. He does get wounded. He's trying to flee. He realizes he's not going to be able to escape. He doesn't want to be tortured by the Philistines. He asks his armor bearer to kill him. The armor bearer is totally freaked out, scared out of his mind. He can't do nothing. I mean, he's just frozen. He's like, and Saul finally decides to go by suicide and falls on his sword there. And of course, that ends up leading to the armor bearer saying, if he just did that, I'm going to go the same way. Saul definitely did end up dying because he went into battle. He didn't get actually killed during the battle, but he got killed because of the battle. Finally here, none of these options required David to murder Saul, which is what Abishai wanted him to do. He wanted him to kill him, wanted him to murder him, and David says, nope, not going to do it. Murder would have been David getting revenge, and vengeance belongs to the Lord. We see that over here in Deuteronomy 32, verse 35 and 43. And Paul cites those two verses over in Romans chapter 12, verse 19. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I shall repay. So verse number 11. The Lord forbid that I should stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. But I pray thee, take thou now the spear that is at his bolster and the cruse of water and let us go. Okay, so the notion of attacking Saul was a detestable thing to David. Okay, but David had a plan. He wasn't just going to let Saul camp out there and just watch him. It's like, yeah, okay, bye-bye. I guess we'll see you about this time next week when you swing back around, Saul. Bye. Auf Wiedersehen, Dirtchi. No, he's got a plan. Previously, as we said earlier, he'd cut off part of his robe and, well, kept his distance. This time, he may not have even been wearing it. He kept his distance. Saul may not have even been wearing the robe when he had cut off. But this time, though, he's got a plan. He sees the spear sticking in the ground right next to Saul's head. He sees the cruse of water, that water bottle. So as Saul wakes up in the middle of the night, he can have him a quick drink. As his throat's getting dry, he's like, oh, that tastes so good. And then go back to sleep. He sees these things, and it's like, I know what we can do, and we're going to have us some rousing success by doing this. This time, items get taken that are right there by his head. This act would also show just how close David got to him. I mean, you think about it. This stuff is sticking there by his head. Whatever it is that Saul did there in the cave, whether he was relieving himself or he took a nap, he may have took the robe off either way to do it and easily just went in, my coat's over there, but, cut off the bottom part of the robe. This is right here next to him. That spear literally is going to be where he can reach over, grab it, and use it. It's not going to be, hold on, time out, let me get up and walk 10 feet over there to get it. No, it's right here. The same with the water. Because as we all know, you wake up in the middle of the night, you want to do as little as possible so you can go back to sleep as quickly as possible. And if you've got a traipse all over the house, what's the chances you're going back to sleep? Not very good. So you keep the stuff right there. Hey, no problem. So, in many cultures, the spear or javelin was used in place of a scepter. Taking it would be tantamount to challenging Saul's authority. You know, because remember, he kept using that spear or javelin, whipping it at David, trying to kill him. Well, here it is. It's right there. And he could, you know, have that spear, stick it out there, charge or retreat or, you know, whatever we got to do. Use it to fight with, defend himself. However, it's his authority. I am king. The Oriental spears had a spike at the user's end that made it possible to stick it into the ground. Not laying down, because if it's laying down, now you're trying to grab hold of everything, all this dirt, rocks, whatever, to get a hold of the spear to pick it up. But if it's sticking in the ground, now you just reach over, grab it, pull it, you're ready to use. Quick draw if you want. And if it's leaning against something else, you know, and if you bump it, now everything falls, and now you're scrambling, and, you know, was it leaning against other spears? Now you're trying to get it, and you got the business end pointing toward you in the process, and, you know, whole big thing, but sticking it straight into the ground, easy to grab. The bolster. I had to look up that word bolster because I was not sure what it meant. I thought I did, and turned out I was kind of right. The bolster is a type of headrest or pillow. So kind of like those headrests we got in our cars there, so you technically can lean back a little bit and rest your neck and your head as you're driving along if you... Not one of these people who slouches over the steering wheel, like, I'm not going to say who, but yeah. Or the pillow, you know, it's something that you can have your head propped up a little bit. The cruse would be a jar or jug for holding a ready supply of refreshing water nearby in the night. This one most likely would have been a bit fancier so as to identify it as belonging to the king. So, you know, maybe he had some jewels on there or gold trim or whatever. But it would be something everybody say, that's the king's. Don't touch that one. Not just because it's by his head, but because you look at it and say, oh, yeah, that's Saul's. That's definitely not mine. I had this one time years ago. We use what's called a hook in order to drag our stacks of bread. It's got a T-shaped handle, so it's big enough where I can wrap my hand around it, and it's about 3 feet, 3.5 feet long, and there's a hook at the end, and you use that, you stick it in the bottom stack, and you use it to drag. Well, I had this one time, I had it hanging on a stack of bread there at the depot, and I had stepped away for something, I don't remember what, and one of the shippers told me that another driver walked past and says, oh, there's my hook. And the shipper said, I think that's Dennis's. And he grabbed it and he looked at it and said, you're right. It's not quite the same. So he put it back. And the shipper told me, it's like, well, yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of paint in a couple of the crevices there. So I would have been able to identify it. And the style of the hook itself, I changed from the pattern of the other hooks that some guys would sell. So I knew it was mine. But the hook itself was of the same stock and design as everybody else's, but I changed that hook, and I had at one point spray painted it. I could identify it. Same here with this cruise of water. Saul would be able to identify and say, yeah, that one's mine. Everyone could say, yeah, that's the king's. Don't mess. He don't want your cooties. Verse 12. So David took the spear and the cruse of water from Saul's bolster, and they gat them away, and no man saw it, nor knew it, neither awaked, for they were all asleep, because a deep sleep from the Lord was fallen upon them. Now, I want to back up and reread just a little bit here, verse 11, down into verse 12. I pray thee, take thou now the spear that is at his bolster, and the cruse of water. So David's telling this to Abishai, and let us go. So that kind of implies that they're talking really quietly to each other because they're right there. So it's quick grab it, you're closer, reach down, pick this stuff up, and let us be off. Not necessarily that they're looking down the hill and he says, hey, go fetch that and bring it back up here and we'll take off. It really does imply that, especially when you get to thinking about how much Abishai really wanted to kill Saul. And there's a lot of frustration with these men because they recognize Saul is the problem. And David recognizes that there's something else going on. And because he's the Lord's anointed, we can't do it. And since they know he's the one who's anointed to be the next king, and he's the hero of Israel, they can't sit here and say, yeah, I guess that, David, we're not going to listen to you this time. No, they have to listen to David. And, of course, later on, you know, we'll find after the whole Philistine fiasco that they even got to the point where they wanted to go ahead and kill David at that point, as their frustration just kept boiling over on them. But with Abishai, he just really wants to kill Saul. So you can just picture David going down there with him. He's like, yeah, I'm going to keep an eye on you so you don't accidentally slip and kill him. And when you get over into 2 Samuel, you see just how much Joab and Abishai, they wanted revenge for their youngest brother being killed by Abner. I mean, what can we do to kill him? So you can picture David being smart enough to say, you know what, I got to keep him on a really short leash just in case. But also being smart enough to know that he should have someone else going down there with just for his own protection. So David didn't go down there by himself because, you know, he might would, you know, miss something and step on something. Or a second pair of eyes, because they are doing this in the dark, could say, hey, you know, nudge him a little bit and don't step there. Look at there, you know, the person's hand, you would have stepped on him. And they help guide each other. So they're best to work for two. So I personally think that that's what all is going on here with that. Back to the notes here. Saul was in greater need of mercy than he knew. And David took this opportunity to give him this undeserved mercy. This wasn't David. He used Abner as a representative to go get pick up the items, because he did ask him to do it, and Abishai actually doing it. Even if David literally did just stand up there on the hill and told Abishai to go down there and do it, he was doing it as a duly appointed representative under David's authority. It's the same thing as if David himself actually had picked it up, because Abishai was working on his behalf. And in the deep sleep, I thought that this was pretty interesting here, because the deep sleep, the first time we see that term being used is back in Genesis chapter 2, verse 21. And again, it's another place that it comes from the Lord. And it's when God removed one of those ribs, not one of yours, because yours is bruised, or might be bruised, but took one of those ribs and used it to make Eve. Which reminds me of a joke. There's this little boy, and his side was hurting him something fierce. It was just hurting. And he's rubbing, and he's kind of whimpering a little bit, and his mama asks him, what's wrong? And he'd been a good boy going to Sunday school and all this stuff there. He looked at his mom and says, I don't know, but I think I'm about to have a wife. So we got that first reference there for the deep sleep. Other references for God causing a deep sleep. Genesis 15:12, when he had Abraham fall asleep and marched the torch and the furnace through the sacrifice there to seal the covenant. Another show of God causing a deep sleep over in Isaiah 29:10. And then again with Daniel in chapter 8, verse 18, when God was going to get to reveal a bunch of things to Daniel. So a deep sleep from the Lord, things tend to get done. Anyways, any sounds that were made from sneaking into the camp and removing the items were not enough to wake up the people, because they were in this deep sleep. God even caused those that might have been on guard duty to fall asleep. 3,000 men slept their best for a few precious minutes because it was part of God's plan. And Saul's men, they were just seemingly too eager to sleep. I, I'd, I can't fault them. I know I'd have been one of those 3,000. I just like, I'm checked out. Don't bother waking me up unless the forest is on fire here. Because I ain't getting up. I like my sleep. So, what do we got? Okay, so a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen upon them. I think that'd be a good place for us to go ahead and stop for tonight. With it being 6:30 and all. Good place to pick up for next week as well. Do we have any questions or thoughts or comments? All right. That being